My name's Lauren. I'm an alcoholic. Well, I'll tell you how this started a couple days ago. I went tubing down the Colorado River with some friends, put my sunglasses on, put my progressive glasses in my case, laid them on the dash of my truck. I got back and they're all destroyed from the heat. So these are a pair of cheap readers that I need today to read. And then I sat down here with a glass of water because I couldn't find a bottle of water and promptly got up here and tipped it over, so it's still dripping on the floor. Anyway, I'm Lauren. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May the 25th, 1996. So this coming May, it'll be 30 years. And I always like this little AA app because it says you've been sober 29 years, 9 months, 3 days, or 10,871 days. And who'd have thunk it, right? Who'd have thunk it back then when I hit the treatment center and my life was completely unmanageable, completely. If I go back to the beginning, I suppose, I was raised on a family farm. I was the fourth generation on that farm. I was only the second generation born in Canada. We'd come from Britain. And that alone, when I became old enough to have to start farming, or not have to, but I wanted to, there was a lot of pressure I put on myself because three generations have made this. Don't destroy it, right? So even though I don't think anybody intentionally put that pressure on me, I put it on myself. So that'll become part of the story as I go forward. My grandfather, who loved brandy, he had Mickey's of brandy stored all over the farm. And as young as I can remember, he'd be pouring capfuls of brandy in a capful, and here, sonny, have some of this. It'll put some fire in your belly. Yeah, he was pretty good. He was pretty right. I mean, that put a lot of fire in my belly. And then by the time I'm 12 years old, I have two younger sisters. I'm the oldest and the only boy on that farm. Mom and Dad went somewhere and left me in charge of the girls. And I found a gallon of red wine in the basement. And I got into that. And I only remember staggering around in the basement of that new house that was built in 1969, so I was only a couple years old. And I felt free, or freer than I've ever felt. I felt something I'd never felt before. But before that night was over, I had my first blackout. And I woke up in bed the next morning, and I had done what I learned to do again later in life, was I went to the bathroom before I got out of bed. Everything, I puked, everything that exited my body was red, and I couldn't stand wine for decades after that. But then when I got to the treatment center, they told me my emotional development stopped at 12, so I'm still just a 12-year-old kid inside this 66-year-old body. At 15 years old, I had a cousin older than I that took me out with the boys. And the only thing I remember of that night, not the next thing, but the only thing I remember out of that night was them pouring me out of the car. I got out of the car, I remember staggering out of the car and falling down the front lawn, and that's all I remember. And he had to explain to my parents how I'd got so drunk when he took me out to take care of me, you know, and have some fun. And of course, it wasn't his fault. I also remember one other time, very young, on the farm, gallons of gas came in 45-gallon drums. And I popped the lid off one of those one day, and I was sniffing gas until I was dizzy. And I'm not sure how old I was then, 8, 10, 12, I'm not sure. But never thought of anything of that at that time, but it certainly was molding me into being a full-fledged alcoholic. Then as we grew up, there was neighbors beside us, and farm families help farm families. That's the way it was back then. But there was always bottles around, always a bottle to celebrate with your neighbor after you'd done working cattle or seeding a crop or picking stone or whatever it might have been at that time. And he and I got, once we got old enough, we became drinking buddies, right? We just worked together, played together, and drank together. I remember when I got married, my wife at the time said, you know what, Lauren, I think I've married two guys because he's here as much as you are nearly. So that started to mold into my drinking and my drinking buddies were more important to me than my own family. And, well, you know how that would sell later in life. One day I get a call from his dad saying, "Lauren, get over here right away," to his farm. So I ran over there. At that time, he was married to one of my cousins, and she was standing over the porch looking down at him with a scolding look, and his bags packed, and he can't live in here anymore. He's drinking too much. By that time, I knew a couple guys that were in AA, so I called them. I says, "I don't know what to do." I was still drinking, so I had no idea what to do. Anyway, they came over and they had a chat with both of us, and they took him off to Angus Campbell Center in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. It was a 14-day dryout center. And Daryl went into there and stayed the 2 weeks, come out, and he stayed sober and he went to some meetings. So I'm told, I wasn't going myself yet. And then all of a sudden one day I get another call. "Lauren, your friend is dead." And I said, "What do you mean?" "It was my grandfather. Well, your friend shot himself this morning." So I went over there, and his dad was there, and my cousin, and the two kids, and everybody's in tears. Gordon had went out to the barn and found Daryl laying on the floor of the barn in some straw with a .22 rifle across his belly and a trickle of blood coming out of his mouth. So already I knew where this disease could lead us, and I hadn't got honest about my own drinking yet. So from that, then I think I continued on in the community. I got involved with the Lions Club, and I was on the RM Council and different committees around town and be quite involved with some of that stuff, and did really well in a lot of that stuff. And then I started to get a pat on the back. "Oh, you did such a good job of that. You did such a good job of this." I'd never heard that in my life at home, never once. So guess what I ran after, right? I ran after that approval, not realizing that I was becoming an approval seeker. No matter where it came from, whether it was dysfunctional or not, I became an approval seeker. I see some of you nodding. You must be relating. Right, Patty? Anyway, during that tenure of my life when I was in the Lions Club, I also got very good at running cabarets, which are Canadian dances, if you could talk Canadian, and beer gardens at ball tournaments and stuff like that. Anyway, at one of these ball tournaments way back in the early 90s, one of the ball teams came up to the ball tournament, to the beer gardens, I should say, after the end of the night, asking if they could buy some off sale for their campsite. And although we weren't supposed to do that, I said, "You know what? What campsite are you in? I'll bring some down. You can pay me, and then I'll just..." And I didn't keep the money. I gave it back to the Lions Club like I was supposed to. But when I went down there, that one of those girls was a young girl, younger than me, 8 or 9 years, it turned out. But her eyes, mine, and mine locked. And there was instant lust. Imagine that. So, guess what? An affair starts, because this was going to fix my life. I wasn't happy at home, right? I married the wrong girl in the first place, with the long and short of it. But again, I was feeling an inside emptiness with outside people, places, things, my entire life. And so a few short weeks later, her and I moved out of our respective spouses and in with each other. And that very first night, because my wife was gone and the kids had gone to the city to her parents for something to do. And before that particular first night was over, her and I ended up in my camper breaking all the vows that her and I had said to our respective spouses of the day. So it led me into moral values that I should have had and didn't. Or I don't know how you want to word that, but that's what it turned out to be. And this affair went on for about 3 years. And then one day I awoke we had moved back out to the farm, and I awoke to that farm, in that farmhouse, to a girl that had something on her mind. I could just tell her demeanor was a little different that day. And she stood right in front of me, put her hands on my shoulders, and said, "Lauren, I love you to death, but I can't live like this anymore. You're drinking too much. You're becoming too violent. My family's coming out here with a U-Haul today and moving me back to the city. So I did what Lauren always does. I got in my truck and ran away for the day. Come back home that night, and this big, empty 1,600-foot square foot home had this echo, empty feeling. It was not only empty physically, it was empty of body, mind, and spirit, I suppose. So then it was May. That was May the 25th, 1996. I woke up sober that day and haven't drank since. For some reason, God said, Lauren, you don't need to drink anymore. And that compulsion to drink left and it never come back. Lots of behavior came back over the years, but the actual compulsion to drink has never returned. So I phoned a few days later. I'm in the tractor at like 5 in the morning out seeding, and I phoned this Don Kay, one of the guys I phoned when my friend got committed suicide. And I always liked him. He'd have fun with me. We'd go on road trips, and he was an antique guy, and I was an antique guy, and we just had a lot of fun with him. And he was one of those guys. I knew he was in AA. I knew he didn't drink, and he always seemed happy. You know, he had so much things that he had a disabled daughter and stuff that I thought was devastating, and he seemed to sail through it all with grace. I wanted that, right? I had another guy, another neighbor, a friend of his that was in AA, that seemed to always preach at me about, I see a lot of you and me, maybe you should come to a meeting. I still have a resentment against that guy. If you can relate to that. Obviously, by the laughter, you can. Anyway, a few mornings, like 5 in the morning that morning, I called Don and says, Donna left me. I don't know what to do. He says, it's the booze, isn't it, Lauren? Yeah, it's the booze. So he says, well, it'll rain one of these days. I'll come get you and we'll go to a meeting. And he hung up. What? You're not going to save me? So no, he didn't save me, but he come, it rained, and he came, and he got me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, Friday's my second favorite F word. And I don't use it very often when I'm up here, but on the way home from that meeting, he said, Lauren, you know what, you might drink again, and you probably will drink again, but your drink is fucked. Because he knew that my conscience would get me now that I'd actually admitted I had a problem, right? Anyway, so got seating done, got spraying done, and he said to me that day, why don't you go to Myers Recovery Center in Regina? That's where I went when I sobered up 10 years ago. So I went to that place, I found it, and I phoned, and I made an intake appointment, and I went there. And it had gone then from a 28-day inpatient to a 21-day outpatient when I went through it. But I think Wayne was the guy's name that did my intake. He says, oh yeah, you passed with flying colors. So anyway, I attended that treatment center, and I rode in there on a Honda Goldwing motorcycle with leathers, sleeveless shirts, chaps and vests and tattoos and farm guy, tough guy. And about a week into treatment, Robin, who was the head counselor, says, Lord, you know what? I know a lot about your mom and your dad and Donna and your wife and your kids, but I don't know nothing about you yet. What about you? Where do you fit in all of this? And that started that glass wall around me with a hammer and smashed it into a million pieces. So I went from the tough guy of the group to the marshmallow of the group. I couldn't open my eyes, or couldn't open my mouth without crying my eyes out. And that's just the way it's been ever since. I'm a crier. I'm a 66-year-old male crier. It's just the way it is. Can't help it. After treatment, Don and I tried to patch things up. We got together and did a bunch of reminiscing and a bit of repairing and a bit of trying to reconcile. But she was still living in Regina and I was living at the farm, and I started roaming again. Imagine that, another old behavior coming right back. So that didn't last long. About 9 months into sobriety, she left. Well, then I'm devastated. Now I'm really in the bottom. Now I've really hit really, really rock bottom. And I load my 270 rifle and stick it in my mouth. My fear of dying was greater than my fear of living. And I also knew what my cousin and those two little girls were going through. And the thought that went through my head was, Lord, you dumbass, you cannot show your kids this is an option to dealing with life. You just can't show your kids this. So, put the gun away, phone on, go back to the city, and get back to some more counseling. So for the first 3 years of my sobriety, the first year I stayed in an aftercare program, and I saw a counselor one-on-one. So for the first year, I saw a counselor twice a week and at least 5 meetings a week, sometimes 6 or 7 meetings a week. And I had to drive an hour from my farm to attend every one of those meetings and counseling sessions. So it was a commitment. And in that time, too, I had to deal with my father saying, well, you don't want a farm. You're always gone. Hey, he's made you nothing but worse since you got here or got there. So I had to deal with that and still keep coming to meetings and coming to counseling. And without the support of people like you and those treatment center people, I wouldn't have made it. You know what? And on the way down here, I was in a truck for 2 days by myself, and I drove, whatever, 30 hours. And I listened to AA tapes all the way down here on Spotify. And I think Al-Anon's important. Somebody was talking about Al-Anon this morning, about how important it is for relationships. And I really believe that. It is absolutely critical to maintain a healthy relationship with somebody else. But there was a joke on the way down. One of those speakers had, and I thought it was funny. So there's an alcoholic family. The dad's in AA, the mom's in Al-Anon, and they have a boy. And they're driving down the highway in a pickup truck, and the truck quits. So they get out and they start walking, and they walked and walked and walked, and they walked until it was dark, and they finally come across this farmhouse. So they walk in, knock on the door, and the guy answers, and they tell him their issue they're having. And the farmer says, well, certainly you can stay here for the night, and we'll get you going in the morning, but there's only one bed in the house, a spare bed, so two you can sleep in here, and somebody's going to have to sleep in the barn. So the kid's all excited. I'll go sleep in the barn. I'll go sleep in the barn. And he goes and sleeps in the barn. But about 15 minutes later, he comes back to the house and says, oh, I can't sleep out there. Those animals, they're loud and noisy, and they're just crazy. I can't sleep. And the dad says, well, then get in here with your mom. I'll go out there. So he goes out and shit in 15 minutes later, and he's back in the house. He's right. Those animals are crazy. I can't stay out there. So the mom, the good Al-Anon girl, says, yeah, I'll go out there. About 50 minutes later, the animals come and knocking on the door of the house. And another joke I heard, this is a little more risque maybe, but it was another AA guy's talk. There was an Alcoholics Anonymous member. He just loved to make love when it rained. He absolutely loved it. So one day it's pouring rain. So they go upstairs and they start making love, and all of a sudden they hear a car drive in the driveway. And the girl says, oh, that's my husband. He's home. You got to get out of here. So he out the balcony, down on the street, and there's a bunch of joggers jogging by. And he starts jogging along with the joggers. And this lady looks over and says, do you always jog naked? Well, yeah, I like jogging naked. She looks again. Do you always wear a condom when you're running? Only when it rains. Fast thinkers. We're fast thinkers. I talked a bit about that relationship with my dad. It's never been good and isn't to this day. But it was about 11 years sober when this happened. Him and I got into a scrap one day. Let's go back just a bit before that. At 7 years of sobriety, it took me 7 years to make amends to my parents. And there were three of us in the middle of the farmyard at my parents' yard. Finally end up sitting there, we're all three hugging and crying. Everybody's saying sorry to each other. Life was good for a short while after that. But my dad and I were like oil and water, and we are to this day. At 11 years of sobriety, we get into a scrap one day in the shop. And there was an incident when I was 4 years old when I ended up with a cast from here to my ankle on a leg from my mom's temper. And I brought that up, which I shouldn't have, but I did, in a blaming sort of way, and said, you don't realize how that can affect me even now as an adult. And I was 40 years old, and he was my age at that time. And he looked at me and he says, don't you ever mention that again to me. You made us do that to you. And so I ended up phoning my sister next to me. She wasn't home, but I left a message. And her and I were always pretty close. I left a message on her answering machine. Somebody better come and kill this old prick before I have to. Well, she got scared, phoned the RCMP. They listened to the recording and come and charged me with uttering death threats. So now what am I going to do, right? So I drove to Moose Jaw the next day and admitted myself into mental health, and they diagnosed me as acute depression, with acute depression, and treated me for that. But they also started me on a journey to help me realize that I couldn't stay there. The psychiatrist on staff said, Lauren, you have to get out of that cycle of violence or you will commit suicide, sober or not. And you've done well with 11 years of sobriety with no other help, like medical help, but you can't continue to do that. And the old school AA back then, especially from some, like Pine Lodge was an institution at that time that wouldn't take anybody. If you were on an antidepressant or any mind altering drug, they simply wouldn't take you. So I didn't want to take anything, right? And he assured me that this drug called Effexor wasn't addictive at all. And I was to stay on that for another, I think it was 17 years. And it was a horrible thing to come off of. And now they've prescribed me bupropion, I believe it's called. And it's not, it's been fine since. But I'm still on it. So anyway, over the next 3 or 4 years, I finally pulled the pin and left that farm. And life's been a lot better since, you know that? I gave a lot up, I thought, leaving that farm. But I was only thinking monetary stuff. The value, what the land was worth, what the machinery was worth, and how much money I was making. And I wasn't thinking of the emotional side of how much healing might take place. And I want to just read something. When I started reading this book, I found on page 544, Freedom from Bondage. The mental twist that led up to my drinking began many years before I ever took a drink. For I am the one of those whose history proves conclusively that my drinking was a symptom of a deeper trouble. You know what I like about this? You guys are all blurry now. Through my efforts to get down to the causes and conditions, I stand convinced that my emotional illness has been present from my earliest recollection. I never did react normally to any emotional situation. The medical profession would probably tell me that I was conditioned for alcoholism by the things that happened to me in my childhood. And I'm sure they would be right as far as they go, but Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that I'm a result of the way I reacted to what happened to me as a child. But what's much more important, AA has taught me that through this simple program, I may experience a change in this reaction pattern that will indeed allow me to match calamity with serenity. So no matter how bad things may seem, or how difficult or toxic or whatever else, other word you want to use, the situation or the day may be, there is something to learn out of it. There's a positive that will come out of everything. And sometimes it's pretty hard to see when I'm in the middle of it. One of the things that was taught to me early in sobriety was And I was a private counselor by the name of Hervin Hovland back in Regina in those years. He's long gone now. But he said, Lauren, when you've got a day that you just don't know or something's happening, an incident, that you, how am I going to get through this? Write it down. Then a couple times a year, go back and look at your list and just see what that turned into. Half that stuff I couldn't even remember 6 months later. You know, it was a good lesson that this old skinny coot, I thought, but he was pretty smart, right? He grew up on the streets of Vancouver, came to Saskatchewan, got his ChemDep degree, and turned into be a very, very good mentor. So that was a start, too, of step two and step three. Because I wasn't one of those that woke up the next day, I sobered up and had a spiritual awakening. That didn't happen to me. I had to learn it through osmosis, I suppose. So I came to AA with a resentment of God, or resentment to God. Then I came to believe, and then I came to trust. And today, I trust in God that I'll be okay at the end of the day, no matter what. Even if I died today, I'm at peace. I'm okay. I know I'm going to be okay. I've made all the amends to date that I think I need to make, and those I haven't made, I would if I could. Somebody talked in the last relationship talk about go a year without a relationship when you sober up. One of the guys that I had known was in AA way back before I sobered up. He went 7 years waiting for his wife to come back. And she finally did. And they've been together many, many years since. But and I thought, when Donna left and I sobered up, how the hell? I'm not going to go 7 years. Who wants to go 7 years? Without sex. Well, guess what? I went 15 months without anything, and then I went 10 years without a meaningful relationship. It must have been God's way to say, Lord, you got to get used to Lauren. I don't know. But that's the way my life went back then. I don't know how many months it was after, or it was after the 10 years, I guess. Anyway, I met this lady finally. Because I met lots of good ladies that were very nice people. I lived on a farm. I was an hour from the city. Nobody wanted to live out there. So I did. I finally found one that would live out there. Ignored every red flag there was. And invited her out to the farm. And I could see red flags all over the place, but I ignored every one of them. We got to scrapping. She was kind of a garage sale addict, I suppose, filling the place full of junk in my terms. But anyway, she did end up going to Calder Center to address that challenge while I kept going to AA. And she came home, and life seemed pretty good. So I said, do you want to get married now? Sure. Well, about 15 months later, I finally had to ask her to leave. And then it took another 10 years to get that divorce over with. And several $100,000 of my portfolio for somebody that it was a farm that was paid for. Other than her labor, she didn't have anything in it. But that's not the way the judge saw it. So I had to learn acceptance. Imagine that. Something didn't go my way and something big. But I learned, you know. And she's the one of all those girls that I was in relationships with. She is the only one that I haven't made direct amends to because she won't let me. She's blocked me everywhere you can think of. And I could if I would. That's the one I was talking about. I could if I would, but I can't. It's not my choice. And that's another part of acceptance, right? We got to just accept it. Some people are just there. I'm going to go back a bit to the spiritual side. My mom has an older sister and five brothers. The first brother was 17 years old when he passed away with a defective heart. The second one was 23 years old, a member of the RCMP, got killed in a shootout. The next one was in the Navy and then a military policeman. He got drunk, hit a semi head on, and got killed at 29. All I heard, and I'm not real sure this is what they said, but I'm just real sure this is what I heard. Why would God do this to me? Why would God do this to our family? I thought God's supposed to love us. I heard every negative thing you could hear about God for a lot of years. Plus, my mom and her mom and that side were raised Catholic. Dad's side was Anglican. But I heard this punishing God that judged me in every way. You can't do this. You can't do that. You can't do this. You can't do that. God will get you. You'll go to hell. Blah, 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 blah. So the resentment to God was, I can't meet his expectations. So why would I believe in somebody that I can't meet expectations? But you people here have taught me that God actually loves me. He knows I'm a human being. He knows I have a free will. And he knows I make choices. And he knows that every choice I make, not every one of them is going to be the right one. So sometimes Lauren makes mistakes. But my God picks me back up, sets me on my feet, says, you dumbass, what are you going to learn today? Then I talked to a Lutheran minister that I know quite well that's retired, and he said, Lauren, because we got talking about redemption, right? And the guilt inside of me, I can't forgive myself for a long time. And he says, you know what redemption is, Lauren? You know what God wants? He just wants you to change direction. If you've been doing the wrong things and it's led you into a hole that you're in, then just change direction. That's all God wants. Recognize where you're at and change direction and start doing better things. That's all it is. Guess what? That felt really good, right? That was a huge step in self-forgiveness. Huge for me. Huge for me. So that ended up, that relationship ended, that divorce and stuff over 10 years. And in the meantime, through those 10 years, I met another girl on Plenty of Fish, the internet. I hooked one. Her and I spent 12 years together. The first 8 was really, really good. We both would tell lots of people that this is the best relationship we've ever had. In hindsight, it started out as lust. We met and hardly were separated since. 3 months later, after that first meet, we buy a house together and move in. She's got two daughters, but the one daughter and I were always like oil and water. We never got along at all. But then came the COVID thing, right? I despise government telling me what to do. I absolutely despise it. And they thought I should follow every rule that was ever laid out. And I'm not a rule follower neither, right? And this led to a incident at the daughter's home one day that turned into a bit of a yelling match. Not a bit of a yelling match, quite a yelling match. And went home. And then she phones her mother and says, we don't want Lauren here anymore. He can't come here. So for 2 years, every time Marilyn went to see her daughter, Lauren had to stay home. Do you think that started a resentment again? Maybe just a little one. So for 2 years that went on, and then I said one day, look, I'm going to come today. And I won't talk politics, and I won't talk COVID. And I didn't, and I have not to this day. But about 7 months ago now, she left. I come home one day and she's gone. She's moved right back in with that same daughter that she was living with when I met her. And that's just the way it is. Another mistake, and I'm almost 30 years sober by now. I'm 29 years sober when this happens, right? So, I mean, for me, lots of things are good, but relationships have been a struggle. It's just the way it is. Just the way it is. I want to talk too a bit about an uncle. This is starting to be more about how forgiveness worked in my life, I guess. My dad has two brothers. They're all gone now. My dad's still alive. He's going to be 90 in April. And my mother turned 90 last June. I went to that 90th birthday for my mom, and my mom and I are good today, really, really good. My dad not. Anyway, I went home from that, and I had a week worth of nightmares. That was just last September. Last June. And it still threw me into a week of nightmares about abuse from my father as I grew up. I've gone back to some therapy now, again, the last few months, over some of that issues. And I said to that therapist, AA told me that I stopped emotionally growing at 12, and she says, no, Lauren, that's not true. You do all your learning between the ages of 4 and 6. Your basic human path is set. That incident with that cast on your leg happened when you were 4. That's when your emotional development really stopped. And that's why you and your dad can't get along, is you're still searching for some love, compassion, and guidance from a man that you're never going to get it from. You're just never going to get it. She related that to a story with her and her own dad that she hadn't seen now for 30 years. She said, I just can't go there anymore. So if you really want freedom from this, Lauren, you probably will just have to stop going there. My dad phoned this fall in September, this is where the September thing came in, to wish me happy birthday. It's my belly button birthday since September. And that phone call ended with him threatening to take me out of his will completely forever. So she's right, I just can't go anymore. And I said, Dad, you know what, I love you, but I can't come here anymore. I can't come there anymore. There's too many triggers for me. I just simply can't come there anymore. I just told him the truth. And he didn't take it very well, but so be it. That's, again, some acceptance on my part that I can't. I just can't. And I've done everything that I think AA's taught me to do as far as make amends and accept my side of the street, to the best of my ability anyway. But when we get at each other, that still, that blame will come out. I can't seem to stop it from time to time. Anyway, back to his brother, who was a bachelor and a drinker, huge, huge drinker. When I was probably 14, he sexually abused me. He drank lots, but he taught me lots of good things too, and he's always good at helping me around the farm and giving me good guidance in that way. And I've forgiven him completely for the abuse. When my grandfather was dying that day, they called the family, and my uncle was drunk, and nobody'd go get him, right? Because he's just drunk anyway. He'll make an ass of himself. Well, I was sober many years by then, so I went and got him, brought him in. He deserved the closure, but so did my grandpa. And then when my Uncle Jim died, they asked me to do his eulogy. So I consider that part of the rewards for having a couple decades of sobriety by then. Now, I'm not sure if I said this earlier, but when I had the affair with Donna while I was married, my kid's mom, my wife, started an affair with my closest neighbor, who was my drinking buddy after the first one died. Well, then I became obsessed with that, right? You can't date my best friend. And so my oldest daughter, who would have been about 11 at that time, I talk a bit about how my dad treated me. Here's what I did to my daughter. And every time I tell a story, I get some from the crowd. I looked my daughter in the eye and I says, look, you get Keith out of your mother's life or I'm going to kill her and I'm going to make you watch me do it. Yeah, see? How do you make amends to stuff like that, right? Because sorry doesn't mean shit. It's a living amend. And that same daughter phoned me Father's Day 1995 and said, Dad, we're not coming to see you anymore because you're too volatile. And this isn't Mom telling us this time. This time it's us. We're not coming. So my kids told me, you're an ass. We're not coming to see you anymore. Well, in about 3 years of sobriety, that same daughter writes me a letter and says, Dad, it was a long, long letter, but the long and short of it was all the things that happened to me as I grew up have taught me to be a stronger, more independent person, and today I can see you love me. And then just this fall, it was after that relationship ended 7 months ago, she actually wrote me another little note reminding me of something that I'd been told by a counselor about life. Life is like you're sitting in a car. Look out the windshield. It's vast and bright and open, and I can see the whole future. Your past is like the rearview mirror on the window, right? It's just a small little mirror. That's how our life should be. And my daughter had to remind me of that this not long ago. Dad, I like that analogy. And she said, the kids have a really, really good grandpa, and we want to keep it that way. That's a reward from staying sober 30 years, or nearly 29. Is I've got 3 kids, I have 11 grandchildren. My grandchildren have never saw me drink. They know that I'm going to sell and move now, and my son has twins that are 11. And little Hudson, the girl, says, Grandpa, can we come visit you when you get your new house? The one girl's 16, she's the oldest. They range in age from 7 to 16. The 16-year-old says, 2 years ago, so she was 14, Grandpa, can I bring a friend to your place this weekend? They wouldn't do that if Grandpa was drunk and an ass. They just wouldn't even consider asking that. Those are rewards. Time is it? It's just about out of time, aren't we? 9 of these grandchildren are biologically mine. The other 2 are step-grandsons. The 9 go to the same school together. And they gave out leadership awards this year from grade 8 and down. They gave 6 leadership awards to students from grade 8 and down. 4 of those 6 were my grandkids. 2 from my daughter that's the teacher, and 1 from each of my other kids. And the 16-year-old is a grade 11 honor roll student. And they're all doing well. They're in AA hockey. They're in AAA hockey. They're dancing. One got Rookie of the Year in rodeo this year for team roping and steer wrestling at 12 years old, 13 years old, right? So the cycle, somebody said earlier and today in one of the talks, the cycle is broken. Some friends of mine from Milestone, Saskatchewan, they're down here now. They were here yesterday. I had coffee with them. And Marion congratulates me all the time. Lauren, you broke the cycle. They know the whole family, right? We have for our entire lives. We went to school together. And I didn't break the cycle. AA and God broke the cycle. I brag lots about my grandkids and my kids, because my kids are, they were 13, 11, and 9 when I sobered up. Now they're 43, 41, and 20, or 39. And they've all got businesses and careers going on. My son farms 10,000 acres. My oldest daughter, Saskatchewan agricultural livestock specialist for the province. Her and her husband own an excavation business and employ people. My daughter that's a teacher's got her master's degree, and she looks after the entire special ed program in a whole school district for a while, and now she's just in one school. But they've all done things that at 4 years old I was just dreaming of, right? Because I was just sobering up. That's reward. That's gratitude. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous. And I close with everybody knows what page 164 says. And I thank everybody for listening. We're about out of time, so just thanks, everybody. And thanks, Patty, for the phone call. Lauren, would you be our speaker? Our Saturday morning speaker canceled. The mental twists that led up to my drinking began many years before I ever took a drink, for I'm one of those whose history proves conclusively that my drinking was a symptom of a deeper trouble. And through my efforts to get, oh, that's bondage, sorry. Duh. I've been up here too long. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something that you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear the way, the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. And we shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. And may God bless you all and keep you until then. Thank you.